and welcome to another edition of the Ice World podcast with me, marine biologist Nadia Frontier, featuring conversations I recorded whilst working in Antarctica with the British Antarctic Survey. This time, we're speaking to Joe Cole, the wintering meteorologist at Rothera Research Station. As an atmospheric scientist, she looked after weather and climate-related instruments, taking daily weather observations and launching a weather balloon every morning. I loved working with Joe in Antarctica, and it was super insightful to get experience and to learn about a field from a different scientist and to help each other on our fieldwork. I also really enjoyed learning how to categorise the sky in terms of giving weather observations and learning about different cloud types and cloud heights. So let's hear about what inspired Joe to head to Antarctica.
Previous to coming here, I completed a master's in meteorology. So I've always had an interest in the weather and climate. And I think in the current environment that we're in, it's becoming a major topic of conversation in all forms of business and life as well. And coming down to Antarctica is a really unique experience to get hands-on in looking after instrumentation and science that is completing these climatological databases that are making us improve the way we act and make good decisions, hopefully, for the future.
And do you have any reservations about coming down to Antarctica, one of the most inhospitable places in the world?
It's just such an incredible experience. I don't really know how I could have turned it down. It's such a unique opportunity. And although my mum's first response was, I would never go, but if you want to go, go. My dad's first response was, that's incredible. I wish I was coming with you. So it's an incredible opportunity to come to somewhere that I would never have come to and, you know, be part of this science that we're developing here.
So let's start with the weather balloon. So this is a daily undertaking. Can you describe what the weather balloon is and what it does?
Yep. So we are part of the global network that release weather balloons. So all across the world, weather balloons are released every day, generally in the morning and the afternoon. And these help get a vertical profile of the atmosphere. So this is taking measurements of wind speed, direction, temperature, humidity and pressure, so that we can get a better idea of all those variables throughout the atmosphere so that they can feed live into the weather models and forecasts that we create to make them more accurate so that we can give better forecasts and therefore make better decisions in all walks of life.
Who is making these forecasts? Who's responsible? What organisation?
So part of the World Meteorological Organization, they're responsible for the radio sonde campaigns that go across the world. So our balloons that we release here are supplied to us from the Met Office, who get them from the World Meteorological Organization. So most UN organizations pay in to the World Meteorological Organization. And something which was really nice with meteorology is that it's all open source data. So all the data we collect is open for anyone to access if they want to. And that means that, you know, people in Africa, people in Australia, people in America, everyone can access this data and use it to put into their models. And those organizations take this weather data that's collected from Antarctica and across the world, and they put that into their data assimilation. So it goes in and it goes through all the computer programming and modeling and dynamic equations that they have for how we model the world and the atmosphere, and helps to produce a better forecast.
And how high do these balloons travel in the atmosphere?
So it depends on what's going on in the atmosphere. So for example, in the summer here, the highest that we'll get is around 30 kilometres.
But in the vertical height.
Of vertical height, yep. So we're aiming, the whole aim is to get above 100 hectopascals of pressure and to have a look at the variables there, because that's a really useful forecasting level to look at and get data from. But the balloons will keep going up until they pop. So as the balloon goes up, it's filled with helium on the ground. And as that goes up in the pressure, that balloon expands and it will keep expanding until it pops and it will fall back down to Earth. But where it's popping at the moment, because we're in winter now, it's a bit lower than it is in the summer. So at the moment, we're looking at anywhere between 16 kilometres to the max that we had a few days ago was about 23 kilometres, which was pretty good. But in average, over winter, we're looking at about 18, 19 kilometres. Whereas in summer, we're looking at getting 25, 30 kilometres. So it's kind of popping at a similar pressure, but those pressures change.
And the starting size of the balloon is roughly the size of
It's about a metre wide, I would say. So just over a metre wide in diameter. So it's quite large when it's on the ground, but it gets even bigger when it goes up. So it's popping and it's expanding at what they say is about the height of a double-decker bus. So it's getting pretty big before it pops. And it's made of latex. So it's made of a very stretchy material. And we keep it in an oven as well when we're before we use it, just to make it extra stretchy when we fill it up. We try and launch in all conditions that are safe and suitable. So we do have a cutoff of 30 knots. So we will try and launch lower than 30 knots. But this year in winter, we've actually been part of a year of polar prediction project, which has been looking at special observing periods where we're launching more balloons more regularly. And in those ones, they're looking particularly at atmospheric rivers. So we have been launching in stronger than that conditions this year. So I have actually launched in like 46 knots, which was pretty extreme. And it just basically flings the balloon out of the container as soon as you open the door.
It's like ripped out of your hand.
Basically.
And the radius on just goes.
Yeah, so we try to minimise the number of launches we're doing. We try and get it in our first launch, obviously. But if we have one launch where it's maybe nicked something or just there's been a slight hiccup that meant the launch has failed, but we think we can get it again on the next launch, we will launch again. But we do make a cut off there so that we're not just releasing these balloons into the atmosphere for no reason. This data is really useful for producing forecasts and that can actually make better decisions environmentally. So aircraft flights, for example, use a lot of forecasts to make their flights more efficient. So they might fly on tailwinds or things like that. And these balloons and different vertical profiles make that the forecasts more accurate, that these decisions can be made a lot easier and a lot more accurately. So in the long run, they will reduce some of that environmental impact in terms of the decisions that can be made from them. So all the aircraft have onboard instruments where they can get their own weather readings and wind direction and wind speeds that you can see coming along.
What kind of instruments are you responsible for looking after in the field?
So in the summer season, we service our weather instruments. So we have several automatic weather stations in Antarctica at places like Fossil Bluff and Sky Blue, where we have stations in the summer for BAS staff to go out and further deeper field to support science. We have a weather station on the Ronny, and we also have, we support some Dutch weather stations on the Larsen Ice Shelf as well. And we go out in the summer and service these sites. So these are year-round giving us observations, and the data that we get gets sent back to us via Iridium over for 3-hourly data and 10-minute data as well. So we go out and service these instruments by making sure all the instruments are working on there. So they're measuring wind speed, temperature, humidity, pressure, and things like that. And we just go out and make sure it's all working, raise the instruments if they have to be raised. So some of our sites get snow accumulation every year. So we need to put in new mast section and move all the instruments up so they're not getting buried under the snow, so that we can still keep making measurements year on year.
And in terms of other methods of data collection, you also measure the snow accumulation each year. That's also part of a long-term time series that's been happening for 20 years?
Yeah, so we measure the snow accumulation out at our sites, mainly just for us to be able to service them in the deep field. But we also do snow measurements on site. We also take snow measurements and snow samples for the Vienna snow sampling study, which basically takes water samples from all across the world at various meteorological sites. And these all get sent back to Vienna, where they're then tested and they do a lot of isotope testing. So this is something they look at for radiation and things like that. There's a lot of different isotopes and stuff that they look at in that.
What's your favourite part of the job?
Oh, I'm not sure. I really have enjoyed launching the weather balloons this year and being part of the year of polar prediction that we've had going on. Just because it's been a really intense period of balloon launching, and it's something that's really hands-on and that gets you out in quite extreme environments. So that's been really interesting to be a part of. But I think in general, just looking at the sky is just beautiful down here. The sky and the clouds vary so much, and we just have some really beautiful conditions you don't get to see everywhere else. Like the nacreous clouds that we get, noctlucent clouds, and all the lenticulars that we get of varying degrees down here. It's just awesome to look at.
Can you tell us a little bit about those cloud types you mentioned? People who are not familiar, what's a nacreous cloud?
So we get some polar stratospheric clouds down here, and some of those are noctlucent clouds and nacreous clouds. So polar stratospheric clouds are really high up clouds. So they can be like 40,000 feet in the sky or way over 30,000 feet. And often, because they are so high, occlusive clouds, for example, as the sun sets, you get this twilight period where it's dark low down, but those clouds are so high that they're still catching the light. So they look like bright white in the sky, lighting up the sky like their own source in the sky. And nacreous clouds are another form of polar stratospheric cloud, but they're quite related to ozone as well. And they have a more iridescent tinge to them. So they have lots of different colours in them and are just beautiful to look at, really.
They are absolutely beautiful. They are pretty massive sometimes as well.
Sometimes they can be absolutely huge and they are just gorgeous to look at. And they can last as well for quite a long time through the day, which has been really nice when you've been out on the hill and you can just see these clouds for like an hour, just slowly changing just in little bits, but absolutely beautiful iridescence in the sky. And the other clouds that I really like are Altocumulus lenticularis, which is a lenticular cloud, which is formed by like upper level turbulence. And around us, we've got a lot of mountains. So we get a lot of like lifting and gravity waves that are formed from that. And these lenticular clouds are very smooth. So they often look like UFOs. You can get them elsewhere in the world as well. And they're just beautiful. And we get these really nice stacked lenticulars where there might be just be like several stacked on top of each other that just gorgeous. They will slowly disintegrate as well.
They are absolutely stunning. And it's really cool to capture time lapses and see how they form and how they break apart. So what are you hoping to do in the field this summer?
So this summer we are hoping to go back out to some of our field sites and give them a service. So we're going to replace some of the instruments on them so that they could be recalibrated. So we're going to take out some pressure sensors on some of them. And one of our stations is currently not giving any wind data back. So that means that over this winter, there's obviously been some extreme wind that's come through and it's probably lost its bearing. So we're going to have to replace the whole prop vane on one of our instruments as well this summer.
And something else that you're responsible for in the summer is hourly weather observations for aircrafts.
Yeah, so in the summer we support the aircraft operations that go on out of Rothera and in the field. And we give those as hourly air obs. So everywhere across the world where you have aircraft coming into land, generally they are given the wind speed on the runway, the wind in the area, and the direction and the pressure. And the pressure is really important because it allows them to put that into their systems on their aircraft, on their altimeters, and get the actual heights that they're flying at in comparison to the ground pressure that's below them. So we do those hourly air obs and we're giving all that information back to the pilots. And if there's bad weather, so we get a snowstorm that comes through, then we'll be giving them more often than hourly.
Yeah, so you have to be really good at speaking on the radio and clear and concise.
Yeah, so generally we're feeding it into the tower team and they're feeding it out to the aircraft. But when out in the field at Fossil Bluff and Sky Blue, we also have weather ops coming in from those stations when they're manned. And that will be given by a field guide or a member of support staff that's out there giving those weather observations back to the aircraft and to Rothera.
But you train these people up. So you're actually training them up on how to do atmospheric observations and looking at cloud base and visibility. That's another important.
Yeah, we give them a bit of training to identify certain types of cloud. For example, like stratocumulus cloud is a lower level cloud. So if you're seeing something that looks like that, it's generally going to be below 5,000 feet. And then we're looking at things like altocumulus clouds, which are going to be above 5,000 feet. And then really high clouds like cirrus clouds, which are generally going to be above 15,000 to 20,000 feet. And that's how we're getting them to give us a basis of what they think the cloud base is, because the pilots are using that information to judge, you know, how much they can see and what the contrast is like and things like that.
Tell me about the Met Tower, because that is the most impressive view from station.
Yep, so here at Rothera we have a Met Tower. Met Towers are used all over the world and generally they're at 10 metres height. So they're at a standardised height so that you're getting these standardised measurements at various points across the world. So we have a Met Tower here that's taking measurements of the wind speed and direction. We have a Stevenson screen that's also taking measurements of temperature. And we have a radiation sensor, a sun sensor. We have present weather sensors. We have a cloud-based recorder. So we have a lot of instrumentation here on Rothera. And most of that information gets fed back into our synoptic observations. So throughout the year, we do 3 hourly observations of the weather that's going on here. So that's things like visibility, temperature, wind speed, pressure changes, and the current weather that it is, whether it's snowing, whether it's blowing snow and different things like that. So the Met Tower is a really good source of information, and it's beautiful.
So if any of those instruments go down, you are kind of an engineer as well. So you have to fix these instruments and responsible for getting them up and running again so they are collecting data.
Yeah, so most of my role is like an observer technician role. So I'm observing the weather, and then if one of our instruments is breaking or needs some troubleshooting, that's what I will go up and do. So a lot of my job involves plugging it in and just turning it off and on again. But there's a lot of problem solving that's involved in it as well, and creating new cables and setting up new instruments and making the connections all work as well.
Your background is also in maths.
Yeah, so my undergraduate was in maths, and then I worked for a while. I've done various jobs overseas, just travelling and working overseas. And then I also worked as a transport modeller for an engineering consultancy for a little while as well before I came here.
What did that involve?
So that was doing a lot of mathematical modelling behind roads. So when they want to build a new road scheme, the council and the government, they have to satisfy certain criteria for that road to be built. And I did the modelling of the strategic road network, which was motorways and A roads, and basically coding roads into the current road network and then testing it to see if there's delays on the road. But a lot of what I'm doing now isn't really modelling at all. I'm mainly just looking after the scientific instruments and making weather observations.
So back to what we said at the start, you were worried about being away for so long in one of the most isolated places in the world. You have been here for 9 months. What's your summary of the experience?
Yeah, it's been good. It's definitely different being away from home. And like, while I've been out here, my brother's had a baby, and you definitely miss out on some things that are going on back home. But it's been awesome to be down here with the group of people that we've been wintering with, and been having an awesome time. Just being in such a unique environment is like a really special thing. And it's really nice to take opportunities to stand outside and actually think, you know what, I actually am in Antarctica.
Can you pick out a single best memory from your winter?
Best memory. I'm not sure. I think maybe one of the things on my winter trip, when you've gone out and you've walked all the way up a mountain, and we went up Orca just after the sun was coming back, and the first time we saw the sun was at the top of this mountain, and that was just a beautiful experience. And to feel the sun on your face and see that golden light was glorious, to be at the top of this mountain looking down on a field of snow where no one else had footprints, and all there was our skidoo tracks. So that was a pretty awesome experience.
And finally, what are you most looking forward to getting home to?
I think going home and seeing my family and friends is definitely the thing I'm looking forward to the most. Just catching up with them and being able to go for a cycle ride outside, that would be super nice.
Great. Jade, thanks so much for such an interesting chat.
Thank you.
She's now the science coordinator at Rotherhot Research Station and manages and looks after all projects going into the deep field. If the idea of working in one of the most beautiful and remote regions on Earth appeals, do check out the job section on the British Antarctic Survey's website, where roles from scientific to support staff are regularly posted. And if you enjoy the Ice World podcast, please tell people and think about writing a review. It really helps us spread the word about the podcast. I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.